Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Thanks, everybody, for joining in on the podcast. Brian Fritz here. Quick reminder, you can subscribe to the Between the Ropes podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. You can find it on the Downcast app. Please rate us, review us, and also please support us on Patreon as well. It's patreon.com/betweentheropes. And, of course, you can find BTR on Facebook as well. Just go to facebook.com/betweentheropes. And on Twitter, all of the different social media mediums are out there. So we had Raw on Monday night, and there's a lot of other news and notes. And Scott Fishman from Channel Guide Magazine joining me here. How were your holidays, Scotty?
It was good. We had a good New Year. Got to see Billy Joel New Year's Eve, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
You went to the Billy Joel concert on New Year's Eve.
Yep. And I saw there was Howard Stern was there. Jimmy Kimmel was there.
Wow.
Kevin James, Paul Blart was there.
That's not bad. So how did you were like hanging out in a, like a box with all these different celebs or?
Oh, no. I was in I was in the audience.
Oh.
They were on stage though. Jimmy Kimmel and Stern did the countdown with Billy Joel, and then Billy Joel earlier in the show brought in Kevin James, who did like a little bit, you know, a little comedic bit. But it was cool because it was unexpected. It's one of those things. But just to see Billy Joel on New Year's Eve, like at all, but on New Year's Eve, I think that would made it extra special. He was awesome.
Did Brian Johnson from AC/DC join him?
No, not that I know of.
The prior year, Brian joined, who was it? It was either Billy Joel or Elton John when they were here in Orlando.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's always good when you get those cameos or, as we like in the wrestling business, called run-ins.
I know, man. I mean, if it's AC/DC running, I got to be there. I mean, Brian lives here in the state of Florida. So I had a friend of mine that was bragging to me about that when he got to see it. It was like, oh, you missed out. I was like, golly, you got to be kidding me.
Well, you're coming down here for AC/DC, so maybe you'll run into him.
I am. I got to see my buddy Brian, you know. So, yeah, and he owes me because I spent a pretty penny to go see him and the band playing. So,
I got an email yesterday about new merchandise. That got me excited. I was like, oh, they're coming. It's like in 2 months.
It's not cheap to see AC/DC, but it's cheaper to see them than it's going to be to see Guns N' Roses when they do their tour.
Really, you think?
Oh, the rumor is that the cheapest ticket's going to be $250 a person.
Wow.
Yeah,
I don't know. Given Axl Rose's like history with performing in the past.
Oh,
couple
you mean
years.
Where like a concert starts at 7 and he refuses to take the stage until 11 o'clock at night?
Yeah, I think he burned a lot of bridges in many people's eyes. So it's interesting to see how they expect to command that much. I mean, it's a cool experience to see them, but for me, I'm buying tickets to AC/DC because based on experience and word of mouth, because I've never seen them. I know they came down here a couple years ago, and I kind of regretted not going. So between what you tell me and what other people have said, they're amazing live, and they've already been proven to play awesome live. So
absolutely,
that's what gets me to go.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses, man. They're doing – the belief is that they're going to do 25 to 30 dates. So they're going to squeeze every penny out of it that they can.
But are they going to be like stadium shows? Because I can't picture stadium shows being that expensive.
Stadium shows. Yep.
Stadium shows. So you're talking about upper to high nosebleed seats are going to be $200 and some odd.
The average ticket price will be $250. Now I'm saying the average is going to be $250.
That's still wow. That's
yeah.
I guess they're building on the nostalgia.
Oh well, I mean, you can't say. When you talk about when was the last time you saw Guns N' Roses in concert, I mean, if anybody has seen them, it's been, you know, 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, there is a historical element to it, but it'll be interesting to see how they do, I mean, as far as selling out and stuff. But, I mean, they'll probably do well considering there's a lot of people that want to see them. But if they start sucking, like or if there's any issues early on in the tour, I could see people trying to sell their tickets on StubHub and things like that.
But. Oh, yeah. They get bad reviews. Well, there's going to be some people that no matter what are going to be like, hey, I want to go. Like, I saw Van Halen a couple of years ago because David Lee Roth was back with the band doing the tour. And, I mean, it's a big thing, but I didn't make it out to a big thing. But, like, he forgot the words to Panama in the middle of it. And, like, he did the whole, like, first verse and, you know, went in, you know, did the first part of it and doing the chorus. And then he started doing the second part, and he started reciting the first part again. And I was like, looking at people going, he doesn't know the words to Panama. It's David Lee Roth. What the hell's going on? Diamond Dave, what are you doing to me? But it was still nostalgic. And, I mean, he can't hit some of the notes like he used to, but it was still really good, and he's still a hell of an entertainer.
Right, so you got your money's worth.
I got my money's worth, you know?
Yeah, besides that one little hiccup.
Yeah, I mean, I started looking at everybody, like, wildly, like, did you catch that? Did you catch that? And it's like, he doesn't know the words. Oh, man. Let's get into some wrestling. So let's start with Raw. Let's talk about Raw. So Raw was going up against the College Football National Championship game. I think that's one of the reasons why they did the show the way they did. You know, Brock Lesnar was back. The biggest things that I kind of took from the show was they wanted to continue the angst between Vince McMahon and Roman Reigns of stacking the deck. Whether you get tired of that or not, you know, this is what they're going to do to build up to a crescendo. And the other thing was that I think every wrestling match on the show was more or less a longer match outside of the Stardust Titus O'Neil feud that just will never go away at this point. Because every week it's the same thing. Titus beats him clean in the ring, but yet they bring it back. But all the other matches seem like they got a decent amount of time. So they just said, hey, let's focus on wrestling and continue our main storyline going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was because I started late because I was at a birthday dinner, and then I was able to fast forward through commercials. But I thought this week the show went a lot faster than it has in the past, not in the past, but the last couple of weeks at certain points. So maybe that did have to do with them focusing more on wrestling. I really like that Kalisto Alberto Del Rio match. I would have liked there not to be, you know, those commercial breaks because that really breaks up kind of like the drama with everything going on. But yeah, I enjoy the fact that they did that. I mean, the format though, definitely, I would really appreciate it if it changed somehow. As far as, I don't know why they, you know, the same with the in-ring segments and the talking and the long drawn out. I mean, it was interesting to see all the, you know, the roster out there. Really funny to see the New Day dancing, performing their own little remix of Vince McMahon. No chance in hell. And I don't know what was going on with Stephanie McMahon last night, but she was like in a giddy mood, or she had that walk going on. I don't know. She was trying to match to the McMahon walk or the shuffle. I don't know, but I thought it was a decent show overall. And I think that, like you said, had to do with the fact that there were longer matches. The last match though was kind of awkward because you had all these guys just watching this one match, and it's all, you know, it was one versus all, but it was really just Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns. And then you kind of expected Brock Lesnar to come out. So there was a little predictability about that. So, but that kind of drew out a little bit because you saw it coming. You were just waiting for that moment to happen.
That was so strange though. I mean, you've got all the talent like standing out there by ringside. And by the way, they were there to start the show on the stage. So it's like, they were just like a band of geeks just hanging out, you know, waiting for the boss to tell them what to do or scold them or whatever was going to happen. And then there they are again at the end of the show, and they're talking about this one, you know, one versus all match, and it's just Kevin Owens. And everybody else is standing there, and I don't even think Vince knew what to do. It was almost like everybody was like looking at each other like, what are we supposed to do here? And like Del Rio was standing there with contempt on his face that he could not hide, like, I do not want to be amongst these geeks right now. Chris Jericho was smart enough to not be out there. Somehow he was exempt, even though he's already been announced for being in the Rumble. So it was just really strange. And I mean, it was great seeing Lesnar come out there and just, you know, start tossing everybody. But the other thing that I thought was strange was, so they had this ongoing story all night where Paul Heyman is talking with Stephanie and Vince, and they want Lesnar in the Rumble, and Heyman is sitting there going, well, I think it would be a much bigger deal if my client was in the main event of WrestleMania, challenging for the championship. So Vince and Stephanie don't want this, and Paul says, my guy's not going to be on the Rumble. And then Stephanie goes into mom mode, where she speaks down to Paul Heyman, and Paul just puts his head down, tucks his tail between his legs, walks away, and then at the end of the show, Lesnar, you know, beats everybody up. He F5s Roman Reigns. There's no talk that he's officially in the Royal Rumble other than Michael Cole going, Brock Lesnar is in the Royal Rumble. And I'm like, he is? And then I guess WWE has on their site today, like, it's official. Brock is in the Rumble. And I'm like, well, that's such a strange way for him to get put in that match.
Yeah, and then what about the Wyatt family? Like, what were they doing out there? They were just hanging out. I don't know what direction they're going with that situation. And then where was the Big Show in all this? You know, another guy that they announced was in the Royal Rumble match. So those are two other things that I was wondering about.
The Wyatt
about.
Family, those poor bastards.
I don't know what's going on with them. And jeez. Did you hear about the rumor? Or I don't know a rumor, but there was people were, the internet was going crazy because Santana Garrett tweeted this photo that was very, that looked just kind of like, you know, similar to a Wyatt family photo that makes people think like she could be like Sister Abigail or whatnot. Mm. And given the fact that she was wrestling on NXT, that, you know, could this be a sign of things to come? But I mean, I would love to see some sort of female like involvement with Sister Abigail, whoever it is, with the Wyatt family. Something to freshen things up from what's been going on with them.
Well, they don't do anything.
They have no idea what they're doing with them.
They don't do anything consistent with the Wyatt family. Nothing.
And it's sad because you know how good Bray Wyatt is. You know how good all of those guys are. Luke Harper, you know.
Outside of house shows, how often do we get to see Bray Wyatt wrestle on TV?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're trying to make it seem special, but he's getting lost in the shuffle, and that's not a good thing. Like, and it's really sad to see someone like that get lost in the shuffle, especially in a point where they have, you know, these voids, these gaps where people are injured. So now there's a perfect time to be pushing these guys, but I guess they don't know what they want to do. I would love to see a face Wyatt family at this point. I mean, they have nowhere else to go. The fans clearly like, you know, the Wyatt family with the whole, you know, the entrance and everything. They love getting into the music. They love getting into the atmosphere. They want to cheer for Bray Wyatt. I think it comes to a point where now it just needs to happen. Maybe this is a little sign of things to come that they didn't come in and help, you know, with the beatdown. Maybe there's something to come because of that. Maybe there'll be repercussions because of that. I don't know. But if they're going to go in that direction, I think that that's a good idea at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, that, I mean, if they're protecting Bray and they don't want to put him on TV because of the character and everything, that's fine. But then they've got to do some more stuff with the character. And it's like, 1 week it's on, 1 week it's off. You feel like there's never really, you know, a real direction with him or a grand plan, so to speak. Not that there is with a lot of guys there, but with somebody like Bray, you always thought, like, there's something there with this guy. He gets, I mean, if you look at, you know, how much they want to gauge social media and YouTube videos and different things like that. I mean, I think that he scales pretty large there. So I'm surprised that they haven't, you know, had a real direction with them. And maybe they will because of WrestleMania season. But it's something that it's like it hits it only a certain time of the year. And it's kind of like, he's the guy that's kind of hanging off on the side a little bit. And we'll find something. Oh, here's something, you know, and we'll do this for a couple months. And then it kind of, oh, yeah, Bray Wyatt is around, but we don't know exactly what he's doing. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. But when you look at when you talk about Raw, I don't know if you're going to move on to this subject, but I just wanted to bring it up because I really enjoyed it, and I think it's one of the things they're actually doing a good job with, the whole Becky Lynch-Charlotte feud. I've really enjoyed what they've been doing the last couple of weeks, and I actually enjoy what they've been doing with Ric Flair. I don't think it's overshadowing her at all. I think it's actually helping her. It's helping her get over as a heel, and fans are responding I mean, Flair has a way to do it, and he's initially helping her out. I have no problem with that. He's bringing eyes and interest to women's wrestling and the Divas division in this kind of way. At this point, especially with a lot of injuries going on. So, and Becky Lynch has really taken the ball and ran with it, especially the last couple of weeks, like on SmackDown last week. That was a great match between those two. And the fans were clearly starting to respond to her, and it's clearly resonating that fans are really liking Becky Lynch. I mean, they liked her before, but now the main roster, they're really starting to get behind her and appreciate her. And when she came out on Monday, I was like, finally, you know, this is great. You know, get have that aggressive side. And I think she did a really good job on the, you know, with the backstage promo that she cut to make it seem important. And she brought some emotion out because they were friends. So there was a good storytelling there. So I actually think they're doing a really good job with telling a story for the Divas Championship.
I think the most surprising thing there is, one, Ric Flair is back on TV on a regular basis. And two, he has turned heel. And it's something where he's getting the reaction from the audience where they're actually booing him. And you saw last night where he, you know, he says, oh, the Divas Champion's not wrestling after Becky attacked Charlotte. And then he was demanding, give me my jacket. And then he was yelling at the crowd.
Yeah, he's great in the manager role. I'm loving it.
He was yelling at the crowd. He did the whole fat boy, hey, fat boy, you know, it's somebody in the crowd.
I missed that. I love that.
It's fantastic. So, I mean.
And what about on, I don't know if you, did you watch SmackDown last week when he actually, like, put himself in front of Becky?
Yes.
I mean, in front of Charlotte, and you know, Becky wasn't to break it up. The mannerisms that he has, he does such a good job to get, because he knows what kind of reaction, what to get a reaction from the crowd, what he has to do to get them, you know, to boo him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's only going to help Charlotte moving forward now.
Well, the funny thing is like, he's dealing, I mean, it's his daughter, so he wants to do the best he can for her, and then he desperately wants to stay on TV. So you know that he is going to pull everything out of the, you know, every trick out of the bag that he can to do the best job that he can for both of those reasons, you know? So, and I think it's amazing that he's getting boos considering, you know, he's this legendary guy that people love, but you know, they love to hate him as well, I guess. And it's like everybody says, oh, we love Rick, but we know he wants to be booed. So let's all work on this together. Let's boo Rick.
Yeah. I mean, he does a good job. I mean, I think, you know, he genuinely loves, like you said, he wants to be a part of it. You hear it on his podcast every week, like how he loves WWE, and he's such a company guy, and he wants to be involved. And this is a great way to do it. And I don't know if they're, I know Mick Foley has been on Twitter trying to get an opportunity or fans want to see it, but, I mean, it would be great to see, you know, him involved somehow. I don't want it to distract what's going on in the ring, so maybe that will do that if he was in there, but it would maybe add a little bit more interest. But I think the fact Flair has been there the last couple of weeks have really helped Charlotte and showing her character. So
yeah, Mick wants to manage Becky.
Right.
And I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I mean, it just depends, I guess, on where they think it fits.
I mean, if you see Flair constantly interfering in Charlotte's matches and they need someone to, you know, even the odds, the sides, then maybe that could be his way to get in.
Maybe, but the question that I would have is, what's the affiliation between Foley and Becky?
Well, he can go back to, you know, he did that big road trip just to see Becky wrestle for the NXT Women's Championship and how he was such a fan of hers. And, you know, so that could be just, he's just a fan of women's wrestling and people know that. So they can build upon that maybe if that's the direction they want to go with him and being involved.
So that means that at one point he would clothesline Rick and out of nowhere, Rick would get up bloodied.
Pretty much.
Like Sheamus last night, by the way. Okay. I don't understand why the hell he did this last night. I thought Ambrose and Sheamus they had a really good, stiff match. They were really just throwing each other all over the place. And then Ambrose starts throwing Sheamus into the post, and he did it like two or three times in a row. And Sheamus didn't put his arm up and intentionally bonked his head into the post until he was busted open hard way. I mean, and you've got this guy who's just pasty white. And just, you could see the cut, and boom, blood just pouring out, right? I was just like, what are you thinking, man? This is like a, you know, Brock Lesnar moment on pay-per-view where Brock just knows perfectly how to do it. But I'm far from a wrestler. I'm far from knowing how to do this. I can't handle pain in any manner. But I can't imagine saying, you know what? I am going to ram my forehead into a steel post until I get cut open and I start bleeding. And I don't know the reason why they did that, too, why he did that. It was so strange to see that happen and what the reason was for it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I can imagine what's happening backstage when they're watching this. Cause I can't picture them saying, okay, ram your head into the pole multiple times and bust yourself open.
It didn't look like an accident. It looked like he was intentionally just ramming his head into it. You know, Ambrose is throwing him in, and he wasn't putting his arm up. And he was just like, I'm just going to go face first in this thing until I'm bleeding.
I don't know. know. You know how Sheamus likes the physicality. I mean,
yes.
I've heard, you know, what was going on between him and Brock Lesnar in their matches, and that got me a little. I was like, oh, that'd be interesting to see on television, to see those two hook up. But yeah, I don't know what was going on last night with that. But one thing I would like to see less of is them using the table as a weapon. I mean, I remember back in the day when it was expected in the main event, or, you know, you started to expect things happening, but I think it's used way too much now as you're watching the matches. It's become such a regular occurrence that it's kind of lost its effectiveness a little bit. I mean, it's still a big move when you put a guy through a table, but, you know, using it as a weapon, I don't know. There's some certain things that I think should be saved, and I think that's just one of the things that's being overdone too much.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But you know what? I'll be happy as long as they get rid of the roll-up finish. If they go away from that for a good 6 months, you know, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, that's another thing that we've seen a lot of. But I like the roll-up that Kalisto used. I mean, that was
fine. I mean,
that was an okay roll-up.
That was a really good match, like you said. The Kalisto-Del Rio match, it was everything that it needed to be. I thought it made Kalisto into a guy as he won the championship, the U.S. championship. You know, Del Rio was dominating the match, and Kalisto kept trying to come back, and he gets shut down. And, you know, finally he was able to come back, and he got the win, and the crowd was really into it. He got to show off some of his flashier moves, and, you know, it gets the belt off Del Rio. Not that necessarily he needed to have it, but, you know, puts it on Kalisto, who I've said that I think that WWE should give him a chance as being the next big Hispanic star. For a variety of reasons, including that the guy can't speak English. So it seems like they're starting to do it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I mean, seeing it the last couple of weeks, you could really see. I mean, you never want a person to get injured like Sin Cara did, but, I mean, look what's happened. I don't know if they were planning this whole thing or, you know, with so many injuries. Obviously they weren't, because Cena got injured, and then Sin Cara got injured. So, you know, they put these guys together. I don't know how much preparation they had in advance or when this was going to happen, but I think it's great. I mean, you're looking for someone else to, I wouldn't say replace Rey Mysterio, but someone to fit that kind of mold and that demographic, and he's a perfect guy to do it. Like you said, he's bilingual, he speaks English, you know, very well, and he has these incredible moves, and he can resonate with young fans as well as old fans with the moves. So, you know, they're putting him in these good situations, and hopefully it's not a short run. I mean, I would love to see him have these kind of matches where you think he's not going to win and then he ends up pulling out the victory, kind of like what made Rey Mysterio. These two have great chemistry together, I think, Del Rio and Kalisto. So hopefully we'll see. This isn't the last we've seen as far as this feud. I mean, I think on SmackDown they wrestle. I don't know what direction they're going to go with that situation, but I would love to see the next couple of weeks him use that U.S. championship, and that will be a perfect example of how a championship can help elevate someone like they did with Kalisto, because there are certain points and certain guys where they don't need the title. They can get over on their own, but this is an example where this could really help him and catapult him, you know, and this year as the months go on. It'll just be interesting to see what happens when Sin Cara comes back. I mean, does he go back into a tag team again? Does Sin Cara turn on him? I mean, are they going to build a feud between those two? I mean, there's a lot of questions now that they've given him this opportunity.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, we'll see where they go with it. I'm just glad they did something, and I hope they continue doing something more with him. You know, watching that entire show, though, and going back to, you know, all those different guys being around the ring and on the stage, the way that they ended Raw, I get the feeling that I know that there's 30 people in there. I know that every year there's only like a handful that we really think could win the match. But I came away with the feeling that the only two people I think that can actually win the Rumble match or Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns.
Right, and then the question is, if Brock Lesnar doesn't win and Roman Reigns does, is it going to be a repeat of what happened last year? Because you know the fans love Brock Lesnar. And you kind of saw a little bit of overshadowing last night with Lesnar now being made as this dominant force, but that could help, you know, Roman Reigns because he has, you know, this insurmountable odds to hold the championship.
Right.
But do you think it makes it a little bit less predictable as Roman Reigns winning the Rumble now that you have Brock Lesnar in this scenario?
I don't know. I mean, you still got the Triple H factor where I'm not saying he's going to be in the match necessarily, but he could try to screw Reigns out of that match, and maybe Lesnar would win it. Here's another thing, too, that if you really want to read into stuff, okay, about the direction that they're going, because sooner or later they're going to do the Reigns-Triple H match. The question is that your Mania main event, or is that a Fastlane match, which is the February pay-per-view? So maybe I'm reading too much into this, and I'm sure some other people have as well, but, you know, sometimes just little nuggets that are thrown out there on purpose. Remember Paul Heyman backstage was talking about Brock Lesnar. He said, my guy is a prize fighter. Who else is a prize fighter in that company? That'd be Kevin Owens, right?
And right. And you saw remember, a little interaction there.
Yeah, and Vince McMahon also said at one point that, you know, Brock Lesnar taking on the world champion at WrestleMania is not, quote, part of the plan. And Kevin Owens did a morning show. Where the heck was it? He did one of these TV morning shows today, and Brock Lesnar got brought up, and he goes, you know, the host said something about, do you have a problem with Brock? And he goes, yeah, apparently I do. He goes, he interfered last night when he shouldn't have. So, yeah, I've got a problem with Brock Lesnar. We'll see where that goes. He goes, but I definitely have a problem with Brock. So I don't know if that's just him saying, because I, you know, he'd love to have the match with Brock, obviously, but I don't know if I'm reading into that too much, but maybe there actually is a thought of doing Brock Lesnar against Kevin Owens.
And the Rumble could be a perfect place to build it up. You could see Owens either get eliminated by Brock and then Brock getting eliminated by Owens or being helped to be eliminated by Owens.
Yeah.
And then that kind of builds things up.
It still seems kind of weird that they did that match. And it's nothing against Kevin Owens, who is an incredible talent. But Kevin Owens against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and this trying to be their biggest WrestleMania of all time, I'm curious how the non-traditional wrestling fan would look at that match. And if that's something they say, yeah, I would like to see that.
Yeah, because in our realm, yes, we would be so excited to see that. But if someone who only watches WrestleMania once a year and is on the fence about ordering it, they're going to be like, who is this Kevin Owens guy at this point? I mean, no offense. Like you said, no offense, Kevin Owens. He's done a great job. But as far as when you build a WrestleMania, you want to appeal to all fans and all these mainstream fans and these fans that aren't, you know, in our realm, I guess the realm of watching every week and being familiar with all the characters. You want to attract them too, but it could also be a great opportunity to get Kevin Owens' name out there with Brock Lesnar being involved.
As we sit here right now, what's your sense of The Rock at Mania? Do you think he's going to wrestle on that show?
I mean, I think it's definitely leaning towards that way. I don't know if they would promote it the way they did or if he wasn't going to be wrestling on the show. I mean, the way he wants to build it up and they want to make it important, especially now with Cena out, they need a big attraction. And with him being in the ring, I don't know who his opponent is going to be or what the scenario is going to be, but him having a match would definitely be helping that situation. I don't see him as a host, so I don't know either way that he would be involved. If they announced it a couple of weeks beforehand, then I'd be like, okay, maybe he's not going to be wrestling.
But they've laid this out. Yeah, he's big into records. He wants to be a part of history. He's even gone like on Instagram and talking about how he's going to be involved. Now he has to go on a diet, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if, you know, I mean, there's been all this talk about, you know, getting the insurance for the movies that he's on because he's gotten injured in the past and they would have to jump through that hurdle. And I don't know if that's something that they've done or nobody knows exactly what's going on, but I don't know. I don't get a sense of it right now because there's a lot of different things that are being juggled right now. So I don't know. I'm sure WWE does, and they probably have a real direction of where they're going now. But I thought for a little while that they were going to do Triple H against Roman Reigns at Mania, which I think a lot of people would be like, I can't believe that's a match that would do to headline Mania. But when you're talking about like the emotions and the McMahon family and all that different stuff, to me it kind of makes sense. I'm not saying that's truly a Mania main event match, but it kind of makes sense. Just like I think the Lesnar-Reigns match makes sense too. But if they go that direction, then I don't know who they would put Rock against unless they went with Lesnar. And that's something that Rock has said he wanted to do in the past. Or hell, maybe we're all wrong, and maybe Rock is just going to have a role on it where he's not in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not wrestling, he's going to have like a physical moment or two. I mean, whether it's in the corner of Roman Reigns or in a corner of someone else, or maybe even being involved a little bit as a tag team kind of scenario, because that way it'll lessen him being injured. I mean, I don't know what, like you said, but him being involved definitely helps, and especially now more than ever. Just the fact that they secured him is very important to the show. But, I mean, now you have Cena probably out. I mean, hopefully Randy Orton can make it back. I don't know what's his prognosis.
Well, how about Orton saying, Oh, he was all out on Dave Meltzer saying, oh, I don't need neck surgery. I don't know what everybody's talking about. He goes, I had shoulder surgery a couple of months ago, and I'm, you know, working hard and I had a schedule on coming back. So maybe Orton is actually going to make it for WrestleMania.
And that would be needed, much needed at this point when you look at it, for sure. I mean, and then you have Jericho back, which is also very, very beneficial. I mean, he even told you, you talked to him a couple months ago, and you were really under the impression that he would be coming back. I mean, he has a great way of kind of teasing the fans and playing with them, but then surprising them afterwards. But, I mean, I've enjoyed, we haven't talked about this yet, but I've enjoyed his interactions with New Day. I think that was hilarious with the trombone.
He's now a wanted David man. Wood. He is a wanted man for breaking the trombone, old Western style.
So, you know Jericho, he loves working with, like, these emerging stars that he knows has potential and he can really help, you know, get to the next level, and you can tell he's a huge fan of New Day, so working with them. But then the question is, did they completely drop the whole thing with Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns after what happened when he first came back? I mean, he hasn't really addressed that in the last couple of weeks, so it'll be interesting to see if they revisit that.
Well, I think at first he wants to be entertainer Jericho, where, you know, he's with New Day, and then maybe they would go back to the Ambrose thing, but that would be after Ambrose got done with Owens.
Right.
So, and you know, the good thing about the Royal Rumble is you can kind of pivot from one feud to another depending on what happens in that match.
Yep, and one night you can change everything. The question is, what other matches are they going to build to? I mean, what are you going to do, Ambrose versus Owens? I mean, the Divas Championship?
Yeah, I can see all that. I mean, well, here's the biggest question that I have. What the hell is Jericho wearing every week on TV now? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, with the...
He had a scarf on and a jacket. I mean...
The scarf, right. I don't know, I thought it was a tie for a second.
I'm like, what is going on here, man? I'm like, is he trying to be an old school version of like the Backstreet Boys or something? Or Hey, if Chris likes it, good for him, man. I know that I can't pull that off. There's a lot of different things I know I can't pull off, but I'm just looking at it going, that's an interesting choice. That's a very interesting choice, but he does love his scarves. We all know that.
Right. I mean, it does get him noticed. I mean, he does stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta rep that rock star look, you know.
That's a rock star look?
That's...
Hmm.
Okay. Rock star look.
Yeah. Well, I want to get back to something quick about the injuries. So, Orton came out, said what he said. Rusev has come out, said, I don't know what this talk is about. I injured my knee. I'm going to be at the Royal Rumble. But Rusev likes to be in character a lot and screw around on Twitter and have a lot of fun. Sasha Banks is rumored to have sprained a ligament in her knee or something. And now she's not confirming it, but she's not denying it either. So she's playing very coy about that as well. And then we had wondered about where Paige has been, and you actually did an interview with her, and she confirmed that she's dealing with a mild concussion. It's kind of interesting from the standpoint of WWE and their transparency of they're still entertainment. They don't necessarily need to come forward with everything, but at the same time, you wonder, should they be more open, especially when it comes to injuries? I know there's a privacy law thing that comes into play there as well, but should they be more open when some of their talent is going to be sidelined for several weeks or however long it's going to be because of an injury and because of the way that they're covered.
I think it depends on the severity of the injury. Yeah. And if they're involved in a storyline and people are wondering, you know, what's happening with these guys, then I think at that point they need to say something to give, you know, to let people know what's going on and why they aren't there. I mean, I think in Paige's case and Sasha's case and, you know, there, it's like, okay, they're not on TV, but were they really involved? I mean, Paige was a little bit involved with what's going on with Sasha and Charlotte. I mean, not Charlotte and Becky, but it hasn't been very prominent in the last couple of weeks. So now she'll be involved when she comes back. I mean, so maybe it wasn't there. It depends on the severity of the injury and how long. If they're only going to be out a couple of weeks, then maybe they don't feel the need to have to advertise that. But, I mean, I don't see, you know, why it being a big deal at normally, but I think the fact that there are so many injuries that they don't want, you know, kind of people thinking like, wait, what is going on? All these people are getting injured all of a sudden. Like, they don't want to be criticized in that way, like, because it's just a bad timing of everything. But if all these guys are getting injured, everyone's going to be like, what's going on? You know, are they doing something wrong? Are they not giving these guys time off when they need it? I mean, should they? But I like the fact, though, they're being better safe than sorry when it comes to their injuries. They're not just rushing them out. If they are injured, even a little of spit, they take them off the road, and now, you know, they're being very protective of these guys, especially even nowadays. It's even more impressive because, you know, they need them on the road. I mean, there's a lot of star power that they're losing in some ways, or a lot of man and woman power. So, yeah. I mean, it's good in that sense that they're, you know, they feel that the individuals are more important, and their health and their well-being is more important than, you know, having them be on the road, taking them off for a couple of weeks. But, I mean, I think it just depends on the severity of the injury. I think that's what they're looking at. But I think at this point, I think in this scenario, at this point in time, they might not be wanting to do that just because there's been so many at once. So they don't want people getting the bad idea, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of in a no-win situation to some extent. And I get it, you know, and maybe you're right when it comes to severity. I'm not saying that they should necessarily, but you're probably right in that it depends on how long somebody's going to be gone for. If it's just going to be a few weeks, then, you know, okay, they're not on TV, but it's not like they're going to be gone for an extended period of time. So how much are people really noticing it, you know? So it's kind of tough, you know. Like I said, there is privacy law that goes into it. And, you know, people want to get on some of the performers about it. And that's where it gets a little bit tough because, I mean, you're allowed to have your own privacy, but at the same time, you are a public figure, you know, in a business that's being covered by a lot of people and being watched by even more people. You know, maybe it's a little bit too much, or I don't know. The amount of information that this audience demands, you know, that they feel like they should know. And there's got to be a line cut off somewhere. There definitely has to be. It's just, where is that line?
Yeah, it's especially nowadays, like you said, everyone's expecting the news to come out. If you don't, then something's wrong. It's gotten to the point where even if you take a week off for vacation, we're gonna assume that something's wrong and you're injured because of the fact that they never let people stay,
right,
you know, a week off. Or like Sasha was even denying, wasn't she at some point, that she was injured, and she brought up the point that, oh, just because I'm off a couple weeks, it makes it look like I'm actually injured.
She was kind of playing coy about it. She wasn't saying that she was injured, but she wasn't saying she wasn't.
Right.
So, but yeah. I mean, Rusev, you know, was on there going, I didn't get injured. But then, like, in the next tweet, he was also like, Rusev never gets injured. I smash all of you Americans. So.
Yeah, see, that's a smart, I mean, he makes it part of the storyline, or
yeah,
makes it his character, his persona. But look, it's like that faction, though, is like between Barrett and Rusev. And this is like,
the League of Nations is DOA, like, man. It's done.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Yeah,
I think it's done.
We have a new faction, though. We have a new faction to look at.
Oh, God, the Social Outcasts? Yeah.
Social Outcasts.
What a horrible name.
And is Ryback a member now? That is the question. That's the big question.
Hmm. What was the thing that they said, four chains make a link, or they were doing like a backwards promo or something last night? It was really strange on Raw. It was like they were,
I don't know, but I don't know about you, but we want to get those shirts on WWE Shop, right?
No. Dude, you can buy a shirt of Vince McMahon's mugshot on WWE Shop.
Oh, my
Shop.
Friend already bought it. The minute I saw it, I had to, like, send this to people, and then he actually bought it.
Oh, my God.
Did
he buy a hashtag 999 shirt, too, or?
No, I think he wanted a part of a deal or something, like buy one, get one 50% off.
Oh,
or something.
Well, that's good.
And I think there was like a Daniel Bryan shirt he really wanted and was on the fence about. So when he saw this come up, he's like, all right, I'm going to get this too.
That's going to be a collector's item. That's so sad.
It's just funny how that works nowadays. Like 2 weeks ago that happened, and now it's a shirt, and I'm sure people are buying that.
No, I meant the Daniel Bryan picture might be a collector's item.
I don't know about that.
How do you like him on Instagram? So like, there's all this, I'll talk about this too, but obviously the reports about the New Japan guys coming to WWE. Daniel Bryan takes a screenshot of the WWE.com story about rumors of New Japan guys joining WWE. And then all he puts in there is, all caps, he puts, clear me now!
Yeah, speaking of cleared wrestlers and wondering what's going to happen with, like, Daniel Bryan, man, and it's WrestleMania time, so, you know, especially he's like, foaming at the mouth to, like, get in the ring.
Can you imagine if he got cleared? They put him in there with Nakamura, and they only gave him, like, 12 minutes at WrestleMania.
What if they put him in there at the Rumble, and then he gets eliminated again? It's the whole situation. I mean...
Well, if he gets eliminated by AJ Styles, then it could lead to a match. So we don't.
Oh yeah,
it, you know.
I mean, do you see AJ debuting at the Rumble like they're teasing?
Yes. Yeah. No matter. You know what? I know that they're probably ticked, and rightfully so, that the word got out and they were going to keep that as a big surprise. I would still go ahead and do it because it would still get massive buzz if that was a
right.
plan.
They're doing an amazing job though with they like you said, the word got out and they're like, oh crap. You know, but they're taking advantage of it. They're teasing the fans.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, so they do a story on WWE.com where they say, you know, Paul Levesque has no comment or whatever about it. Then they did a 10 best arrivals, you know, list with a speculation of the guys coming from New Japan. Here's a list of the best 10. So they're not denying it. And then, you know, you've got... Finn Balor is having so much fun with it, including opening up the door to the Performance Center and taking a picture on Instagram and saying, I'm waiting. And, you know, Samoa Joe is sending out pictures of him with different guys from that group. And Finn's also putting out, like, Balor Club, and it's pictures of him with the rest of the Bullet Club when he was in it and stuff. So, I mean, everybody is playing it up. And it's great, you know, for the hype and everything. It's great, you know. And I know that... As far as we know, nobody has officially been signed, and there was talk that, like, with two of them, and one of them being Nakamura, that, you know, he's still under contract, but Nakamura did this interview with Tokyo Sports saying that he was leaving New Japan come the end of January. Now he's been stripped of the Intercontinental Championship, so he might not be joining with, you know, at the same time as AJ, but I fully expect him to debut in February.
Yeah, and it's probably good that you separate. You don't want them to be together, I mean, as far as you want to use... I mean, you want to spread it out. I mean, if you have it all happen at once, then it's going to overshadow. One's going to overshadow another, maybe. So it's probably good to have this situation where you have it spread out where he comes in afterwards.
Well, I'd have AJ debut on his own. I'd have him do something on Raw on his own. Have the other guys, if this is the plan, join him when it comes to Anderson and Gallows.
Yeah, kind of like the Scott Halls.
Right. So now you've got the three. You've got the faction. And then later you introduce the leader because you thought it was AJ Styles. And the leader is Finn Balor.
Yeah. I'm just looking, even on social media, I'm like looking at the stories that WWE has put out. Like unheard of numbers, like 15,000 retweets for that initial one with our AJ Styles,
yes.
Nakamura, and all them coming to WWE. I mean, it just shows you the importance. It just shows you how it. Look at AJ Styles. Look how much his name has gone out in the last couple of years since leaving TNA.
It's incredible.
It hasn't been that long, you know, since he left that company. And now he's one of the hottest, you know, guys out there, one of the hottest signings out there.
I was telling you when it came to, you know, traffic I've done on sporting news, last week was the Cena injury story and the talk about the New Japan guys. And even on sporting news, the New Japan story got more than double the John Cena story, which I was surprised by because of the name recognition of a John Cena, but it just goes to show how much attention this New Japan story with Styles and Nakamura and all those guys is getting. It's incredible.
It is. And I mean, AJ deserves it. We know that. I mean, he's worked so hard. He's such a great talent, like in the ring, as far as he's never had really bad matches. He always works well with others. He's a humble guy. He's very easy to talk to. You mean, you've talked to him before. I've talked to him before. Very easy to talk to. I mean, he doesn't have an ego about him. So it's great to see guys like that getting this opportunity. But you see a guy like Samoa Joe in NXT, and you see AJ Styles kind of like jump it to go into WWE right away, the main roster. What do you think of that? I mean, how that scenario is going to point out. Do you think that'll increase Joe's chances of making it to the main roster?
No.
When you see guys like AJ, you know, if this does happen, you know he's going to be getting that main roster treatment.
Not one bit. And I just think it goes to show, and it's nothing against Joe, but that's just where his place was, where his stock was, and where AJ's was, you know, and where his name value was, and also being part of that group, and just, you know, timing is everything. So
I was going to say, do you think had Joe waited until around now to get signed, do you think it would have made a difference?
No, because I think he would have had to raise his stock. I mean, that's what AJ did. He went to New Japan. He raised the stock.
Yeah, he really did.
So Joe didn't have that opportunity. I don't know if he had chances with New Japan or what, but you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, maybe he just wanted to stay here in the United States. You know, he's got a family that he wants to be with. So, you know, maybe it was just the right fit for him right now. I'm not exactly sure, but I will always stick to my guns. I don't think Joe's, I could see Joe in the Royal Rumble, but I don't see him getting called up to the main roster.
Really? Yeah, I mean, right now they need NXT guys on there.
Right, but I mean,
I don't know what Joe, I mean, I'm sure he's supportive of his best friend, but I wonder if he's thinking, or is he happy, you know, is he content with being on NXT?
He's got a good spot where he's at right now. I mean, hey, I know they've had some fantastic matches in the past, but I'm not sitting here saying, God, I can't wait to see AJ Styles against Samoa Joe in a WWE ring. I'm not against it, but it's not like if I think of all the potential matchups for AJ Styles, I don't think of Samoa Joe. I mean, there's so many other guys that he's never worked with, and those are the ones that I want to see.
I mean, there's so many ways you can go. I mean, like you can have Finn Balor even with AJ Styles and have a rivalry. I mean, like you said, Daniel Bryan, if he comes back, there's some, I mean, you've seen, but yeah, there's all different kinds of different scenarios that played out, but it would be nice to see him face some different guys moving forward. But where do you see AJ in the situation? Like, that's what I'm trying to think about, is just, like, is he going to go for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at this point? I mean,
I think it's going to be kind of a Shield thing, where they're just kind of a faction, you know, doing their thing. And then,
but who are they going to go? You think the only faction that even believable to face them would be the Authority, right? So I
right.
guess that, but then you would have to build up the Authority then.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, it just depends on, I mean, if they're getting a lot of buzz, then they could put them near the top of the card or at the top of the card. Now, one of the questions that I wonder about is, so New Japan has the rights to the Bullet Club name. I don't know if there's anything to this or not. It's all a bunch of scuttlebutt that's out there. But I wonder if WWE would want that name, you know, if they could get it. I don't know how much it would cost or what they would have to do. But even in today's climate, and WWE being a PG, somewhat PG-13 company, and the, you know, just kind of the business relationships that they're creating, would they even want to have a group named Bullet Club?
Yeah, especially with the gun being such an issue, gun laws being such an issue.
Right. It's Donald Trump's favorite group. I think they'd probably want to stick with Balor Club. I really do.
And there's nothing wrong. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with that, because you want to start a new chapter in these guys' careers. Yes, they work together as a unit known as the Bullet Club, but I think having it the Balor Club is not that big a deal to me. I mean,
well, here's the other question. So what's AJ Styles' name going to be in WWE?
Right. I think at this point they need to use their names that they're associated with.
I totally agree. I mean,
like calling him someone else, but someone that's so associated with, like, AJ Styles. But then you had Paul White. I mean, whenever when the Big Show came in, they called him Paul, you know, used the name Paul White.
Well,
and then they called him the Big Show. They didn't call him the Giant.
Well, look at Daniel Bryan. I mean, Bryan Danielson had a huge name, and then they changed it to Daniel Bryan. I mean,
what are they going to call him? Style? Like, did they call him the Styles, or?
I don't know. I mean,
they want to brand them the way they want to brand them.
What are they going to do with Nakamura? I mean, they're going to change his name?
I mean, they did Hideo Itami's name, so
absolutely. So I could see them changing.
But these guys are like, I don't know. That's gonna be an interesting question. You're gonna make a lot of people angry, but
who cares?
Like, with Finn Balor, I mean, initially, but we got used to it.
We all get used to it. I mean, everybody gets pissed off for a couple of weeks. I'm like, oh my God, he's not Claudio Castagnoli, he's Antonio Cesaro. Oh my God, that was Cesaro. We can all get bent out of shape for a couple of weeks, but then you get over it. I mean, God, why does he have to be Kevin Owens? Why can't he be Kevin Steen? You know, but there are a reason for this. And I mean, I would love to see him keep their names, but I've gotten over the point where it's probably not going to happen. And that's okay, as long as it's not something totally ridiculous.
Yeah, it has to be kind of similar a little bit. I mean, I think, because people are they're so recognizable, especially AJ, he's so recognizable at this point. Mm-hmm. But the thing, interesting part about that is, I mean, they're clearly not ignoring the names, because on WWE.com, they're using AJ Styles, Nakamura, yep. You know, they're using their names. So that could be, you know, they're not going to ignore it, it looks like.
I don't think they'll know what
they're going to do with it.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be using the nickname The Phenomenal One. I think they'll steer clear from that.
They're going to want to use their own nicknames, their own branding, because they want to sell their own stuff.
He doesn't even need a nickname. I mean, there's Balor Club. And, I mean, there's a ton of other things you can do.
What is it about, you think, TNA that they just don't want to mention? I mean, why is it such a big deal? I mean, I don't see why is it. Okay, AJ, because, well, he was in TNA for so long. I mean, I don't understand why.
Just because they're on TV and the presence they have. I mean, not that it's huge, but I mean,
they don't consider them competition, do they? Well, think it's an example of they do see them as kind of a competition.
Oh, you don't like that, like Sting? You know, when they announced him going into the Hall of Fame, he left WCW, disappeared for more than a decade.
I mean, then, yeah, that one, I'm like, okay, but. It's still bad, but come on, with Samoa Joe and James Storm.
Oh, how about
AJ
this one?
Styles, like, these guys are synonymous with TNA. You can't deny it.
Oh, how about this? How about Ric Flair, the Stone Cold podcast? And they talked about his retirement at WrestleMania 24. And he goes, yeah, you know, he goes, I knew I was out of the business the day after that. And he goes, I've just done sporadic appearances for WWE whenever they wanted me. No mention of the TNA career.
Completely ignore it. It's like unheard of.
I mean, what's he going to do? Say, yeah, I went over this group called TNA, and me and Mick Foley had a hell of a match one time, but, you know.
And then you notice with the Triple H conference calls, you know, with other, you know, it's clearly, oh, you know, Ring of Honor, we want to help Ring of Honor, we want to help independent promotions. Never TNA. Never TNA is mentioned.
Well, he's mentioned TNA before, but yeah.
I mean, but not in the same sentence as building, you know, helping the other companies.
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, that's competition. I mean,
I mean, you're thinking, because other people are like, they're not competition, but in a way
really,
they are. They're trying to steal, not steal, but they're in the same marketplace.
They're another wrestling company that's trying to be on national TV, and for the most part they are, which is different from Ring of Honor, but, you know, they're nowhere close to doing the business that WWE is. So from that standpoint, they're not competition. I mean, but for that standpoint, you could say Ring of Honor is in competition, but you know, Ring of Honor is not on the same platform. I mean, they're not on national TV. They're on a bunch of different TV stations around the country, but they're not on national TV. They don't have the same kind of presence. I mean, look at WWE now. I mean, they're working with Evolve. Evolve doesn't have a TV deal, but I mean, you know, they're working with Evolve. There's some kind of deal that's going to be made here. There's a relationship. William Regal is going to be at the Evolve show here in Orlando the day before the Royal Rumble. And he's bringing Jason Jordan and Chad Gable are coming to that show. I mean, I think they're doing an autograph signing, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did something in the ring. I don't know if they'd have a match, but maybe there's an angle or something that could be involved there. But there's obviously a relationship between the two companies.
Right. I mean, I guess it's the fact that you're fighting for the same audience, the dollars, as far as with TNA and WWE, even on a lower scale, it's still the fact that they don't want to, I guess, go there as far as that point.
What did you make of TNA's debut on Pop?
I enjoyed Maria Kanellis and Mike Bennett's debut. I thought they made it a big deal. They did a good job with that.
Yep.
And I thought there was some. The main event was decent. I thought they should have.
It's a match of the
longer.
Year, according to the announcers, man. I mean, I heard them screaming that match of the year, early contender.
Well, that's a match that should have been given a lot more time, and I think a build as far as throughout the show. They should have showed past matches in the World Title Series. I think that they tried to fit a lot in. And I think, I mean, they didn't include the X Division, which is a cornerstone of the brand, which I was surprised about. I think it's interesting to see that Awesome Kong is now with, you know, the Dollhouse. That was an interesting turn. I don't know what they're going to do with the Knockouts. I mean, they seem to be bringing a few familiar or independent names to see, you know, switch things up. So that's good moving forward. I like the idea of Kurt Angle kind of wrestling kind of like a farewell tour because you know his contract's up and everyone knows it. So this is a fun way of doing it where he gets to face off against some guys. It just felt like the same TNA show, though. I think if they wanted to make it like a new chapter, it just needed more of a new feel. I mean, I'm still going to give it a chance the next couple of weeks and see what happens as far as them trying to change the trajectory of everything. But as far as the look of the show and the format of the show, the feel of the show, I was expecting a little bit more.
Yeah.
I like the idea of James Storm, you know, being with Bobby Roode again. I love Beer Money. They're entertaining, even though it's sad that we're not going to know what the potential was there with James Storm in NXT. But I mean, you got to do what's best for your family, and if they were going to offer him more money and guaranteed money like that, I mean, that's the name of the game, and that's where his priorities, you know, are. And I mean, should be when you're a professional wrestler at that point,
right?
Because you're trying to make as much money as you can while you can. And So I don't fault them for that. It's a good opportunity for TNA. But like I said, overall, I mean, the show was decent, but at the same time, I was expecting a little bit more for it to be the first show and all the build. I'm not saying bring in Goldberg or, you know, huge names. There's just little things you could do here and there to make it feel bigger than it was.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought more could have been done. I thought it felt like same old to me. Even I thought it was a huge mistake to start the show with Dixie Carter in the ring. That right there alone told me nothing has changed, that it's the same TNA as we've seen before. You know, I don't know who they went after talent-wise, and I'm with you. I don't think they necessarily needed a big name, but I thought there would have been maybe some different talent brought in other than bringing back James Storm, which I like James. I don't know what else he's going to be able to do there, just because he's already done so much for the company. But, yeah, we'll see what happens, but nothing has really felt different. And then I think it's going to be tough considering that now they have to tape so far ahead, or they have been taping ahead, you know, that they do these, you know, 5-day tapings, and they're taping, you know, a month at a time or however long it is. You know, I know people say, well, NXT does the same thing, and they do, but I mean, it's supposed to be on a different level. It's, you know, so it's, you know, it's tough for TNA right now. It's really tough, you know, and we'll see if those numbers on Pop grow. But I was not overwhelmed by that show. And one of the things that really hurt it, I thought, was the announcing. I know a lot of people have been on them. I think Josh can do a better job, but you can't be selling stuff like it's the greatest thing on earth when it's not, and you shouldn't be trying to say this is the greatest thing anyway. Yeah, I think that's way too much hyperbole, and it's just too over the top when it comes to the announcing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are Burke, the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro.
Yeah,
I know he's trying, and he's
it's too much.
He's still new to the game, but there's times when he is actually hard to listen to.
Yes, it's too much. It's way too much. So, speaking of announcing, let's close on this. What did you think of Mauro Ranallo's debut on SmackDown? Because I thought not only him, but I thought that entire crew worked extremely well together, because we've got Jerry Lawler like doing a heel turn now, and he's a heel announcer. To me, I know that a lot of people are down on Byron Saxton. I get that. I'm not a fan of the three-man booth, but I thought Byron was better on that show than he's been on Raw. And it seemed like he was more relaxed and kind of felt like he had a role there. And I thought the whole crew worked great, especially Mauro.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. When you talk about their move, because they moved to USA Network, so it's a new chapter for them, that felt like a different show. I mean, yes, they had the same characters, the same performers, and kind of the same format, but just having the different soundtrack gave it a different feel of the show, and I think Mauro did an amazing job as far as making every match seem important. Like, he really added to the show. He didn't take away from it. He gave the wrestlers their platform to entertain, and he put them over, and that's what you got to do as an announcer, and I think he did an amazing job, especially with, I was really impressed with his match, Becky Lynch versus Charlotte. I mean, the way he put that match over, he made it seem important. I was very invested in that match because of his announcing. Same thing with the main event, especially when the fight between Ambrose and Owens kind of spilled out and got out of control. I think he did a great job telling that story. And I think it's reinvigorated Jerry Lawler, like you said, like going back. Jerry Lawler was amazing when he was when that heel commentator with it, working off Vince McMahon and working off Jim Ross. And at that point, that was when Jerry Lawler was at his best, I think, anyway. I mean, he's always been a solid announcer, but I think having that edge now, I think, is really going to change the dynamic of the whole announce team. I think they were looking for kind of a different feel for SmackDown. I mean, you see the kind of like the musical chairs that's been going on the last couple of months leading up to Mauro's signing and announcement that he would be joining the booth, the three-man booth. So I think they did a great job with that. It's you know, I think he helped, like you said, Byron kind of up his game as well, and I think he did a good job. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this chemistry develops over the next couple of weeks, because they clearly have something here they can build upon.
Yeah. Lawler seemed like he was a lot more invested, something he hasn't been in a long time, I think. And with Mauro, I mean, I don't know what the if they've been told, like, you can call it this way and it's different on Raw, what the deal is. But, I mean, Michael Cole was brought up in a way where I think they wanted him to do it in a certain manner, and he has stuck to that. And I think Michael Cole, there's a lot of people that rip on him when he does not deserve it, and for all the different things that he does, including his announcing. But Mauro was calling moves, like you said before. He was making things feel really important, and he was different. And I think that's something else that we're so used to Michael Cole being the voice of it, that we hear somebody different that really understands the moves and he understands the stories and everything, and the way that he's able to, you know, put that into words, it's refreshing, you know. And I don't know if Michael, I mean, the broadcast should obviously be different. It's a little bit different on Raw because of, you know, there's a lot more things I think they have to promote there. It's a different dynamic with different announcers, you know. And Michael Cole has always done a certain style. I don't know if they would want him to change that or if he will change it or anything. But just hearing what they did on SmackDown and then comparing it to Raw, it just, you know, was so different. And it was just like, I'm glad it's different. And I wish they would make some tweaks to it on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, calling the moves, the history of every of the feuds, and the history of comparing it to different matches, like when he mentioned Roddy Piper versus Bret Hart for the Intercontinental Championship, I was like, oh, I'm sold on this guy. I mean, if they let him do him, let him be himself, and don't overproduce him, I think he'll do a great job moving forward, as everyone else has said.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to hearing him, you know, going forward. So I think a while.
He's a legit fan, so he's not someone that, you know, is just signed.
He appreciates the job. He's a huge fan. This is a dream job for him. Mauro is renowned for doing his homework. So and I'm glad that, you know, that Lawler seems really invested again. You know, I know I said that before, but having Jerry Lawler really get interested and be kind of this heel guy, and the way that he can interact with Mauro, I think is great.
Yeah, they built when you work off someone. I mean, it's great because you don't want someone to agree with you all the time. So when you have someone that's disagreeing and you have a little argument going on, I'm not talking about, you know, big arguments to put yourself over, make yourself like your own characters and things like that. But I feel like just making it part of the show, and but also using it to accentuate what's going on in the ring isn't a bad thing.
Yeah. We're out of time, man. We got to wrap this up. You know that?
No, we got 5 more minutes, you know.
No. I think we better wrap it up. We already hit the hour mark, so.
Yeah.
I got things to do, and I think you do as well. There's a lot of other
things. As much as I'd love to talk to you for hours at a time.
I know you do, Scott. You know, that's, you know. Hey, you know, but we're going to be hanging out for the Royal Rumble together.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I mean, this is your stomping ground. It's Orlando, Florida.
You're dang right, man. I mean, I'm going to the NXT show. I think I'm going to go to an Evolve show, going to the Rumble.
Oh, you're going to Evolve. Okay, nice.
I think I'm going to go to Evolve. It's in the works. Let's put it that way. We'll see what happens.
So are you going to be wearing anything to distinguish yourself from everyone?
No.
Are you going to run into ZZ?
I'm like, oh, God.
Will you sit next to ZZ? We'll find out.
Oh, you might get to sit next to ZZ again so you can tell me about
that. You sit next to some big names. You sit next to ZZ. You got SoCal Val. Didn't you sit next to Cena at one time?
Now, Cena sat down next to me. Okay, let's get this correct. I was sitting all night long, and then John Cena came and sat down next to me.
There you go. So if you see an open slot next to Brian, that could be someone that's coming.
Thank God I was actually dressed up a little bit that night, huh? That was strange. Like the one time,
I mean, got some screen time.
Not that I ever dress like a slob or anything, but, you know, I usually wear like jeans and like sometimes I just wear a T-shirt or whatever. And that night I was like wearing a nice like sweater with a button up underneath it or something, you know, and next thing you know,
why was that? Were you inspired by David Otunga?
I knew I was going to be meeting some people, you know, there with Full Sail. They did a media function and we're going to be able to talk to some people and meet some higher ups and everything. So I was like, you know, I'll break out like a better shirt for tonight.
Gotcha. You never know. That's why you always bring your gear.
You never know. So everybody can go online and find your stuff over at Channel Guide Magazine and also your contributor for the Miami Herald. When you go to the Channel Guide Mag blog, you can see your interview with the page. Everybody can follow Scott on Twitter. It's at SM Fishman. So thanks, Scotty. And I know we'll do it again here soon.
All right. Always good having having me on, right?
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
I always enjoy the conversation.
All right. Thanks a lot.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.